start off by joining the bandwagon. I have nothing that I have seen in the documentation or the testimony this morning that leads me to question the debtor's honesty, their forthrightness, their candor. Ms. Johnson in particular I found to be a very engaging witness and knowledgeable regarding the circumstances that led to the creation of the exhibit that was offered to me. And frankly, at no point during the process, even when I first saw the motion to approve the settlement, did I question debtor's honesty. I believe I communicated through Ms. Hodson to both counsel, but I wasn't questioning the fact that debtors spent the money. That was not the issue that I was concerned about. I accepted the fact that they had spent the money. But as I indicated at the beginning of the hearing, when I look at the numbers, I see potential disposable income of more than $40,000. And again, that's being conservative. The issue isn't whether debtors can spend the money. It's whether it was reasonable for them to do so. Ms. Johnson mentioned several times in her testimony her responsibility as a parent to do certain things. What was notably missing from her testimony and Mr. Johnson's testimony as well was any discussion of their responsibility to their creditors, their disposable income obligation in particular. That was missing. And the reality is that there are any number of people in South Dakota that would like to do the things that debtors have done for their children and can't do so. They can't afford to do so. And the only way that debtors were able to afford to do so in this case was to take money that would have been disposable income and payable to their creditors and use it for those items. I can't say that it was wrong for them in the sense of their obligations as parents, but I have significant problems with it in terms of their disposable income obligations. So when I'm looking at the reasonableness of a settlement, I have to look at four factors: the probability of success in the litigation, the difficulties, if any, to be encountered in the matter of collection, the complexity of the litigation involved and the expense, inconvenience, and delay necessarily attending it, and the paramount interest of the creditors and a proper deference to their reasonable views in the premises. That's from Tri-State Financial LLC versus Loveld, 525 F3rd, 649, 654, 8th Circuit, 2008, and the citations therein. Trustee Wine's proposed settlement involves a dispute regarding the calculation of debtors' disposable income, which debtors committed to paying their creditors in their confirmed plan. The resolution of that dispute depends entirely on whether the additional expenses that debtors that were described in Trustee Wine's motion to approve settlement were reasonable and necessary. If they were, debtors are entitled to deduct those additional expenses from the additional income also described in Trustee Wine's motion and testified to this morning. If they were not, debtors are not entitled to deduct those additional expenses from that additional income. The starting point for me was the amount debtors budgeted for each of the expenses in question, the additional amounts they spent for each of those expenses during the term of their plan, which was 36 months, and the total amounts they spent for each of those expenses during the term of their plan. Whenever I say budgeted, I'm going to be referring to debtor's amended Schedule J, since that's the most recent budget I found in the record. And since Schedule J uses monthly figures, I'm going to convert the numbers in Trustee Wine's motion to monthly figures by dividing the total amount for each expense by 36 to arrive at the average amount debtors spent each month during their plan for each of those expenses. For telephone, debtors budgeted $150 per month. They spent an additional $115.81 per month. So they spent a total of $265.81 per month for their telephone. For home maintenance, debtors budgeted $200 per month. They spent an additional $99.75 per month. So they spent a total of $299.75 per month for home maintenance. For food, debtors budgeted $700 per month. They spent an additional $377 per month. So they spent a total of $1,077 per month for food. For clothing, debtors budgeted $200 per month. They spent an additional $365.67 per month. So they spent a total of $565.67 per month for clothing. For transportation, debtors budgeted $250 per month. They spent an additional $141.42 per month. So they spent a total of $391.42 per month for transportation. For recreation, debtors budgeted $100 per month. At least in the motion, they would have spent an additional $409.50 per month. And again, per the motion, they would have spent a total of $509.50 per month for recreation. Now, I understand from this morning that the recreation figure might be wrong, but that doesn't get us anywhere because if the recreation figure is lower, that's going to result in a lower expense that's allowable, so it's still going to lead to a bottom line of disposable income. Bottom line is that on average, debtors were spending $1,509.15 each month above and beyond their budgeted expenditures, which were by no means austere, while paying their unsecured creditors only $500 per month, less trustee fees. I'm going to restate those figures. $1,509.15 per month above and beyond their budgeted expenditures, and they were paying their unsecured creditors only $500 per month while they were doing that. I don't think it's difficult to determine the reasonableness of expenditures. That's pretty easily done by referencing the IRS national and local standards. That provides a guideline for what constitutes a reasonable expense based upon geography, based upon family size, based upon income level. The information is there. I'm going to refer to the current IRS local standard, local and national standards, and I'm doing that to take out any consideration of cost of living increases during the term of the plan. The IRS local and national standards were significantly lower 3 years ago, but by using the current standards, I'm allowing generously for cost of living increases. We could do it month by month. We don't need to do that. The point will be made by using the current standards. The IRS standard for all utilities, which include home maintenance, repairs, gas, electric, water, heating oil, garbage collection, telephone, and cell phone, for a family of five or more living in Minnehaha County is $479 per month. For the past 3 years, debtors have averaged spending $905.56 per month for utilities. I arrived at that figure by adding the $690 per month debtors budgeted for the items included in the IRS standard, the additional $115.81 per month they spent for telephone or telephones, and the additional $99.75 per month they spent for home maintenance, which totals $426.56 per month more than the IRS standard. Debtors were already over the IRS standard by $211 when their plan was confirmed. So that's water under the bridge. I'm not even going to take that into account. I'm going to reduce the $426.56 by the $211 that they were already over, but that still leaves $215.56 per month, more than what I consider to be reasonable and necessary. The IRS standard for food, housekeeping supplies, apparel and services, personal care products and services, and miscellaneous items for a family of five is $1,632 per month. For the past 3 years, debtors have averaged spending $1,657.67 per month for the items included in the IRS standard. I arrived at that figure by adding the $915 per month debtors budgeted for the items included in the IRS standard, the additional $377 per month they spent for food, and the additional $365.67 per month they spent for clothing. That is $25.67 per month more than the IRS standard and what I consider reasonable and necessary. The IRS standard for transportation, which includes maintenance, repairs, insurance, fuel, registrations, licenses, inspections, parking, and tolls for two or more vehicles, is $366 per month. For the past 3 years, debtors have averaged spending $590.42 per month for transportation. I arrived at that figure by adding the $449 per month debtors budgeted for the items included in the IRS standard and the additional $141.42 per month they spent for transportation. That is $224.42 per month more than the IRS standard. Again, however, debtors were already over the IRS standard, in this case by $83, when their plan was confirmed. Since that's also water under the bridge, I'll reduce the $224.42 by $83. But that still leaves $141.42 per month, more than what I consider reasonable and necessary. There is no IRS standard for recreation. I suppose an argument could be made that recreation is subsumed within the IRS's allowance for miscellaneous items, but I've already accounted for the full miscellaneous allowance in connection with debtor spending for food, clothing, and other items. Debtors budgeted $100 per month for recreation on their amended Schedule J. Recreation is completely discretionary, and every dollar spent on recreation is a dollar that probably should have been paid to debtors' creditors, but no one questioned debtors' budget, and $100 per month does not seem entirely unreasonable in this case, even if it is in addition to the IRS's miscellaneous allowance. However, again, per the motion, debtors average spending $509.50 per month for recreation. Whether we use that figure or a lesser figure, whatever figure we use, that additional amount above $100 would exceed what I consider reasonable and necessary. In sum, on average, according to the motion, debtors have spent $792.15 per month, more than what I consider reasonable and necessary. Over the course of their three-year plan, that amounts to $28,517.40. Debtors admit having additional income of $66,102. They claim additional expenses totaling $54,329, which would leave them with disposable income of $11,773. However, when the additional expenses totaling $28,517.40 that are not reasonable and necessary are added back in, debtors actually have disposable income of $40,290.40. That is the sum I believe the parties are proposing to compromise for $19,000. Turning to the tri-state factors, based on the record before me, I find Trustee Wine would likely succeed if he were to litigate the issue of disposable income. The numbers are what the numbers are, and again, debtors are very honest people and won't try to manipulate those numbers. Collection may be somewhat difficult for the reasons that Trustee Wine referred to, but the fact debtors will not receive a discharge unless and until they satisfy their disposable income obligation should motivate them to do so, and Trustee Wine can certainly be generous in terms of how debtors satisfy their obligation. With respect to the suggestion that debtors might dismiss their case and avoid their disposable income obligation, I would refer the parties to 11 U.S.C. Section 349A and advise the parties that any attempt to dismiss the case in an effort to avoid the disposable income obligations would not be looked upon favorably by the court, and I would in fact determine that that would constitute cause under Section 349A to bar the discharge in a later case of any debt that was dischargeable in this case. Moreover, I'm hesitant to give too much weight to this factor because that would encourage other debtors who receive additional income during the term of their plan to spend that money, as debtors did, without any apparent regard to their obligation to pay disposable income, and then throw up their hands and say, sorry, all gone. That's not how it works. The litigation should not be complex, particularly since it appears we already have all the figures we need. It should not involve much expense for the same reason, and the flexibility of my calendar should minimize any inconvenience and avoid any delay. Lastly, the interest of creditors is in being paid, and leaving more than $21,000 on the table is not in their best interest. Taking all the foregoing into account, I find Trustee Wine's proposal to settle the issue of disposable income for $19,000 is not reasonable, and I cannot approve the settlement that is before me. And as I mentioned, my order denying approval of the settlement will also incorporate a finding under Section 349A regarding cause in the event of any dismissal of the case to avoid disposable income. And that will be either an active dismissal, a voluntary dismissal, or a passive dismissal in which debtors simply refuse to pay their disposable income obligation and trustee Wine is compelled to file a motion to dismiss.